Talk about SharePoint. Could be boring as watching paint dry, but hey, it's SharePoint, right? So that's me. Done quite a few SharePoint deployments, spanning infrastructure, architecture, and also done lots of post deployment reviews. And I work for a company called Theta. We do lots of stuff around SharePoint. And I'm also a runner, and I have a side project called runwellington.com. If you're in Wellington and you want to know where you want to go running, you can go to runwellington.com. It's a little plug. Right. The obligatory agenda slide. So we're going to talk about a little bit about what's new for SharePoint 2016 on premises. This is probably the only session on SharePoint for SharePoint on premises with a bit of a cloud mix or a hybrid mix. Talk about what will the users see when you upgrade, if you choose to upgrade. A bit about the architecture. And we are going to talk about, well, we're going to see the upgrade process and the planning involved in doing an upgrade. And we'll talk a bit about the hybrid stuff. So when I put this deck together, I wanted to mostly concentrate on what you would do on premises, because there are a couple more sessions around hybrid stuff. That's after mine today. Tomorrow and day after on Thursday. So I've got links to those, and you should probably go and see those as well. And then and a Q&A, and also you get a chance to win a drone. Did I tell you that? Drone. There's going to be questions. So if you are paying attention through the session, I will ask you 5 questions at the end. No, I'm joking. So you get a drone from courtesy of my company. That was the techie guy, because the screen was flickering. Now I switched to a new laptop. So by the way, if you have any questions, put your hand up. We are, you know, it's not a big room and there's only a few of us. Happy to talk through things and discuss things that's specific to you if you feel that need to know about things. Who's used SharePoint 2007? All of you. Good. Well, mostly all of you. And I'm assuming that if you've used 2007, you have upgraded to 2010. Have you done the 2007 upgrade to 2010? Hands up. Yeah. Okay. And 2013, who's on 2013 at the moment? Okay, so cool. Who's used SharePoint Online Services? So back in the day, it was called Business Productivity Online Services. Who's currently on a mix of 365 SharePoint Online and SharePoint 2013? And you already connected the two together? Nope. So you've got a 2013 on-premises deployment and online. Okay, cool. Who can tell what was the biggest change between 2007 and 2010? Yeah, shared services. Yeah. What else from a platform point of view, from an infrastructure point of view? What was the biggest change? 32-bit, 64-bit. Remember that? We had, 2003, 2007. We went from 32-bit architecture to 64-bit architecture, which was a huge improvement in terms of performance. So I think some of you might already know about this stuff, but what's new from... So when I talk about what's new, there's a couple of things you got to think about. You got to think about, okay, what's new from a user point of view? What do users see when you upgrade? What do techies see when they upgrade, right? We have kind of two different viewpoints. From a user's point of view, there's a lot of enhancements to the UI. And if you are already using 365 and SharePoint Online, you would have seen those changes come into play, which is one of the things is the waffle bar, I call it the waffle bar because, you click on it and you get like these tiles. So that's the app launcher. So with 2016, they bought that together so that it's got a more seamless experience. and the other one is OneDrive. Who knows the difference between OneDrive Personal and OneDrive Business and OneDrive Business Pro? So in SharePoint 2016 on-premises, OneDrive for Business is essentially your My Sites, right? You can, it's just a name change. The underlying architecture is the same. But when you go to the online world, it's an online cloud storage thing with syncing and all that kind of stuff. And also, you know, sites you follow, these little changes that make the user experience much more better for users. And then file uploads. Used to be 2 gigabytes, now it's 10 gigabytes, but I can't really see anybody uploading a 10 gigabyte file to SharePoint Online or SharePoint for that matter. You see, these changes, there's a lot of things you need to consider if you're going to do a new upgrade. By the way, I'm going to publish these slides on my blog, so it'll be released to you as soon as I finish my session. I've already got this sorted out. So what else is new? Have you heard about the Compliance Center for Documents and Records Management? That's new. It's really good to apply your information management policies. And also, one of the biggest things is the collaboration experience across devices. Whether you are using an iPhone or an Android phone, now you can have an app for pretty much working against documents in SharePoint. Durable links. So here's another one. Who has deployed Office Web Apps server in their SharePoint deployment? Cool. So in SharePoint 2016, it's called Office Online Server. Yay. but there's a change, big change in there, is that if you used Excel Services is now part of Office Online Server, which makes it a bit tricky for those people who are using Excel Services for any business applications. Now they've got to deploy this separate product, right? So there's a bit of a, you know, oh, should I, do I really want to, type of thing. And Project Server, anybody using Project Server? Yeah, so your Project Server is now actually built into SharePoint. It's the service within SharePoint 2016. Some visual stuff. Any questions? No? I'll continue on and we'll do Q&A later. Okay. What's new but dead? No more SharePoint Foundation. Anybody ever done Windows SharePoint Services, just WSS? So there's no foundation anymore. So the reason they've cut it off is that they want you to use cloud, right? So there's no free version of the SharePoint product anymore. So SharePoint Destroyer is gone. Oh, Designer. You can still use it against sites, but Microsoft is not making another product of it, okay? Workflows, have you ever deployed a workflow manager farm in 2013? Because in 2013, yeah, it's not the easiest thing to do. You would, yeah, so workflow manager is a separate product which you need to deploy alongside SharePoint for 2013 version workflows and using Workflow Foundation. So there's a lot of things that have changed with 2016. InfoPath is still there, but it's not going to be pursued further. So you have to look at the start of different things. Forefront Identity Manager, so if you're using profiles and profile services, now it's called Microsoft Identity Manager, not the profile service thingy. And like I already said about Excel services. You'll have to look at some third-party tool. I think, with the way they're going with some of the new service stuff coming into 365, with Planner and all these kind of things, there might be something, but it'll be based on the workflow product. I can't comment any more than that. So who are in the room, architects or developers? Yeah, infrastructure side. Okay, everything. Yeah, that's usually the case with SharePoint, right? You get to do everything. So, there's quite a lot of changes within the kind of the architecture of SharePoint and deploying SharePoint as a platform on premises with 2016. It's not to say that what you knew about SharePoint, you chuck out and you start new, but the way in which you deploy it is a little bit different. So one of the things that they've done is basically taken the learnings of deploying SharePoint at a massive scale with 365, take those learnings and then applied it at a smaller scale for people who still want to do it on premises, which means your services and your service tiers are now separated out and rules have been built into the services for them to be optimized and deployed according to in different tiers. So there's this new thing called the min role. I don't know if you've heard of it. Have you heard about that? Yeah, the min role? Yeah. So, and these are ways, I'll talk about that again. And then also, what that means is basically you can deploy a certain types of rules and services into a batch of services or role or service, and they can be isolated, which means you're going to get better performance and it's all those rules are already there. And who's ever patched a SharePoint server farm? Yeah, it's not easy, is it? And it involves a lot of downtime and user frustration and all that kind of stuff. So Microsoft has introduced this what they call zero downtime patching, and that's essentially being enabled because of this separation of these services and the service tiers. However, in order to do ZDP or zero downtime patching, you'll have to have multiples of these in your tiers. I'll explain that in a bit more. So if you go for a min role deployment from an architecture point of view, you have front end, that's essentially your web type of traffic, application, which is all your services tier, and then you have this thing called a distributed cache, which is always troublesome because usually if you are deployed 2013, this thing breaks all the time and it affects your service performance. And it's a really hard one to troubleshoot and search. And then you have a role called custom. And then you can also have the option of doing a single server farm. And what Microsoft says is that that's only for test and non-production type of stuff. So there's some options, but at the same time, you have to think about your deployment profile before you choose these options. So why would you use that? Like I said, you don't need to tweak them. Like, you deploy a service and then you have to tweak it and all that kind of stuff. But it's got like self-diagnosing rules that'll look after the server itself, so to speak. And again, like I said, based on 365 learnings, and you can scale vertically or horizontally, however you want it. So as part of min role, so if you, for example, install a SharePoint server, and that's four different servers, you have a front-end server, application server, search, and a distributed cache. So if you go to central administration, this is what you would see in terms of which service is running on which server. And on there, it's also a title called compliant, and you say yes, 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 yes. So if you don't choose this topology when you're installing SharePoint, that compliant tab is going to give you some warnings and say, hey, this is not a compliant deployment until you change it to what it needs to be. Okay? So it's a good thing. It's not a bad thing, but it is a bad thing because you need to deploy lots of servers. And sometimes that's not really applicable to New Zealand. So that's your first supported starting point, which in Microsoft terms is that if you are going to do a min role type deployment, you need to have four servers, and those four servers are front-end, application, distributed cache, search, and of course your databases, because without databases, SharePoint is nothing, right? And if you are going to do the zero downtime patching thing, then you need to have two of these of each of those things, right? So that's where the complexity lies. You have to kind of like outweigh this, like, really, do I really want 8 servers or 10 servers or 12 servers? But that's the key point, right? So your requirements are going to dictate your deployment. So for example, if you are going to go for a min role, you're going to have 2 web servers that request do web stuff, then app. And does anybody know why they have the distributed cache service or distributed cache isolated on its own? Because it has a lot of tie-ins to InfoPath, security trimming, my sites, all those social type of stuff is actually held in cache in memory. And if you want to do availability for distributed cache, you actually need three servers, not two, because they are called a quorum, and one looks after the other, so to speak. And it holds data in memory. And that's why it's really hard to troubleshoot, because if the memory gets corrupted, you lost your cache. And it's probably one of the things that they will keep on improving. And again, if you were going to do workflow, you need to have three: Office Online Server for Excel services and rendering documents on your browser, and rich search results and things. And then also, if you're going to do app deployment, you need to have, so you're going to have a grand total of 18 servers. And I know that that's pretty steep for a medium-sized organization to manage. 18 servers for a SharePoint deployment. Come on, what are you talking about? And what do we do? Single server. Let's do it on single server, right? And Microsoft Infinite Wisdom, they say, is meant for development testing and very limited production use. I don't know what that means. You can do it, but they don't recommend it. However, things have got better because they have actually listened. Since releasing 2016, they have now released one called a feature pack, which you can get as part of software assurance. And in there, you can now actually have shared roles, which is front end with distributed cache and application with search, which is quite important. Now it becomes a little bit more manageable, right? You don't need to deploy multiples of everything. So as part of your deployment profile, you can say, okay, I'm going to use those co-located roles as part of my deployment. Right. At each of my slides, there's a link to more information where you can read. Like I said, I'll publish these slides as soon as I finish. So what is it really good for? It's best suited as a starting point, and also for you to learn about what the product can do and how it can scale and all that kind of thing. And the capacity guidelines change with the type of deployment you choose, so there's a lot of reading to be done, and experiment a little bit. There's quite a few things. So what's your ideal topology? It depends. I always say that there's no best practice topology that you can take out of TechNet or something and apply to your organization. You have to kind of do your homework a little bit. And the good thing is there's guidance and there's worksheets that you can use on TechNet and then figure out, okay, what's our profile? How many users are we going to use for certain workloads, for search, for example? How many documents are we going to crawl? How many users are going to be using SharePoint from different places, and do we need to render documents on the browser, all that kind of thing. I covered that. Can I change later? So if you go for a mineral deployment, can you change it? Yes, that's a good thing as well. So you can start with the say, I'm going to go with a single server, but now I've got more servers in my deployment. I want to now promote the single server into a front end. Then I can do that, right? So using PowerShell and by using Central Admin. Cool. Any questions? That section. Cool. How does it talk to TFS? How does it talk to? Just like it did... So you got a TFS with your work items and stuff like that. So in the TFS land, so basically the connectors are there. Yeah. So from upgrade point of view, upgrade your TFS content database and it'll be sweet. Yeah. As long as you've done any customizations.
Yeah. Older versions, moving from 2.10 to 2.13, you basically had to do a TFS install on the SharePoint system.
So the similar vein. So basically, if your configurations, so customizations come in two flavors, right? You customize
using WSPs or custom code, right? Custom code solutions in SharePoint, if you deployed WSPs or sandbox solutions, which are no longer supported, then you need to extract those out and then recode them, okay? And if you have done configurations in any content database, for TFS, it's just a content database, because in TFS, essentially, it's a site collection, right? Or multiple site collections. You can take that content database, install the TFS components that integrate with 2016, attach the database, which I will go to in the next one, and you'll be fine. Yeah. So here's the one we've been all waiting for, upgrade planning. Yay. Cool. So upgrading from 2007 to 2016. So anybody in SharePoint 2001? Yay. It was. 2003? Cool. So essentially, there's no shortcuts. If you want to go to 2016, you have to go through 2007, 2010, 2010, 2013, 2016. Or you could just buy a migration tool. There are third-party migration tools. If you are just concerned about the content, bringing a content database across to 2016 is easier than, obviously, doing a customized one, right? So you can bring them along if you wanted to. But there are a few things you need to watch out for. So from an end-user point of view, it's an upgrade. Because why? Because they see changes. Their UI has changed. You know, the menu systems are different. The colors are different, all that kind of stuff. And of course, they get new functionality and things like that as well. From a technology point of view, it's essentially a migration of content, because you're bringing the content across. And then you're building some new software and servers, because you had to put SharePoint 2016 on new software and servers, obviously. So the kind of the overall process that you want to use, you need to know what you've got. So plan an audit, do a pretty good audit of what you have, and then build new. You're essentially building new SharePoint 2016. There's no, you have a 2013 SharePoint server farm, you're going to install SharePoint 2016 on top of that. None of that. You can't do that. So you had to build new, right? So it's a good chance to start thinking about these things a bit better and learn from your mistakes, or learn from what you've done in the past. And run some tests. I'll go through this in more detail. Run the upgrade test, and if things fail, run some more tests, run the upgrade again, test, commit, and decommission the old stuff, right? So that's kind of like the process that we are talking about. Usually what happens with SharePoint is that somebody would have deployed SharePoint in your organization, and you have inherited that. You don't know what the hell is in here, right? So you had to, and then the CTO's here, will say, I want my SharePoint upgraded. And then you are going, I don't know anything about this stuff. What do I do? Where do I start, right? There's business applications that business users are dependent on, and the business is saying, I want these applications available to our users 24/7 or something along those lines. So you are sat there going, what do I do? How do I find out what we got so that I can plan my upgrade? Things you need to know: how many site collections have we got? What's the size of those site collections? How much content does it contain? How big are my SQL databases? Because everything in SharePoint is in a SQL database, right? A SQL content database or a service database. How many managed paths are used? And are there custom solutions? Are there being customizations done? And also this thing new it's not new, it's been there for a while, called hostname site collections. Do you know what hostname site collections are? So hostname site collections are where you can have one web application but have multiple sites with a separate URL. And it's a scalability thing, because you've got only one, and the only way you can deploy that is actually using PowerShell. There's no UI for that. But each of the site collections can have their own content database. From a scaling point of view, you only have one web application to deal with, and underneath that are separate URLs. So for example, you can have hr.abccompany.com, finance.abccompany.com, externalusers.abccompany.com, all under one single web app. but DNS being redirecting to separate site collections. So it's a pretty good scaling out point. I think it's really cool. And that's how Microsoft has deployed the multi-tenancy SharePoint online. So when you go to SharePoint online, you have company.sharepoint.com, right? That's how that deployment is made up of. So one of the things you have to be aware of is that if you are doing 2013 to 2016, whoever has done an upgrade from 2010 to 2013, you could leave the UI in its own 2010 UI, right? Which we call 14 mode. So in 2013, if you had upgraded the UI, it would have been in 15 mode. So what you have to make sure is that before you come to 2016, that UI needs to be upgraded. So when you're doing an audit, you can run this PowerShell command and find out what, if you had come from 2010 to 2013, you can find out which sites are still in 2010 mode. You need to upgrade those first before you can go to 2016. Okay? Yes?
So just we've been through 2010 to 2013. So just to put it under the guise, okay,
yep.
Is that option still going to be available 2013 to 2016? So you migrate what you want to the database, leave them as is, keep the same deal, and then take a piecemeal approach if you're trading?
No. unfortunately, no. I'm actually kind of in the same situation at the moment. The upgrade happens, well, the upgrade actually doesn't happen until you browse to the site, but as soon as you browse it, it upgrades it. Yeah. So it's a bit of a challenge from that point of view. So my advice would be first go get the compatibility level, get it to 15, because from a change management point of view, it's a biggie because you had to do screenshots when you're doing user training and stuff and to train the users of the drag and drop functionality and all how the menus have changed and everything like that. So it's because it's 2010, 2013 to 2000, because if you can't go from 2010 to 2016, 2013 UI is as close as possible you would get to 2016. So that's a bit of a, yeah, sorry. So if you are going to do an audit, I really recommend this SP Dockit. If you have not bought it, it's a really good tool as a SharePoint administrator to use. You can use it to audit your entire farm, understand what you've got in there, and you can also do comparisons. So if you've got like a dev farm and a test farm and a production farm, you can run SP Dockit against it and then actually see what the differences are. It's really good for, as an admin, I think it's a very valuable tool. You can do this stuff with PowerShell, but there's a lot of manual work. So what do you do after? So you're part of an upgrade project, so you've done an audit. What do you do after that audit? So the first obvious thing is, okay, we need servers, and we need to set up servers and plan the deployment architecture. And as developers, you need to look at the custom code solutions you've got, and then, start looking at how can I make them compatible in 2016. And as project managers, start planning your change management plan, training plan, changes to UI. All right. So like I mentioned before, first you got to think about how much infrastructure do we have? Do we need to buy new hardware? Do we need to provision a new VM farm? How much resources do we need? If we have, say, you do an audit and you find out we got 5 terabytes of content, we need to go into the upgrade process. How much data capacity do we need to do the upgrade? I would say about 3 times 5 terabytes. Because you had to amount for the fact that you've got the data, it has to transition through. You need a command for the fact for data backups and restores and all that kind of stuff as well, because you're doing a SQL database that's about 1 gig. As the upgrade process runs, it balloons up and then it decreases. So just be aware of the capacity that SQL need as well as what SharePoint needs from a resources point of view as well. And again, service model, the min role deployment topology, whether you're going to use that or whether you're going to just use single server. Workload capacity planning, which by this I mean if it's a document management heavy farm, you need to optimize your SQL disk for read-write. If it's got search stuff, you need to plan for that. And also, what's your availability and your redundancy? We need to have multiple servers in each tier, that kind of things. So from a hardware point of view, I've said, well, the TechNet guideline is 16 gig. But you can do, if you are clever enough, you can do with 12 to 16. One caveat here, I think most of deployments here in New Zealand are virtualized servers. If you are doing virtualized servers, just make sure that your infrastructure people don't assign dynamic memory for SharePoint. It's a big no-no because of memory allocations and how SharePoint uses memory. So if you're doing Hyper-V or VMware, just talk to the infrastructure guys and make sure that any SharePoint VMs that you get is assigned static memory as opposed to dynamic memory. Okay. And CPU, you need about 4 cores. Yeah. And disk, again, faster disk is better for SharePoint. Software, you want to have base OS Windows Server 2012 R2. You can go with 2014 SQL. You can't with 2008. So there's a SQL upgrade as well as OS upgrade there as well, hidden within the SharePoint upgrade. So this is the kind of the difference between upgrading your platform versus migrating your content. So you're essentially doing a software upgrade, and then you're going to bring your content across, right? That's how I look at it. Custom solutions. So there's a new way of building SharePoint applications called the add-in model. There was a talk previously, Gavin gave a talk about using the SharePoint framework, which is all about JavaScript, really. How you do SharePoint customizations is now using JavaScript. We're going back to the good old days again. There's a lot of material provided by Microsoft around this. So this guy, Vesa Jovanen, he's a Finn who's based out of Microsoft. He has some really good material for developers to transition their server-based code into cloud-based code or JavaScript-based code, and what you can do and what you should do and what you can't do. The good thing is there's a lot you can do, and SharePoint is still a pretty good development platform in my opinion. So, if you're doing an upgrade project, it's also a really good time to do a bit of housekeeping. Right, it's like moving from one house to the other house. You usually throw away a whole bunch of stuff before you move, right? So this is a good time to go through your existing content and figure out, okay, has this content been used for the last 3 months or 6 months or whatever it may be? Do you have any regulatory obligations to keep content as it is? And if there is, then you just partition it off into read-only content databases and then use them as you would, or put search over them. You create an archive of all content. So it's a bit of time to rethink what's your information architecture going to be going forward. Those kind of decisions. It's a good time to do the bit of housekeeping and then figure out, okay, we are here today and it's okay, but it's not ideal. What do we need to do to get better? And if you've got like large content databases, it's a good time to split them out into smaller ones or delete content, that kind of thing. So which databases can you upgrade as part of the upgrade or the supported upgrade process, which is database attached? You can pretty much move any content database as long as it's a content database in 2013 compatibility mode, then you can upgrade that. If you have to bring service application databases across, so for example, if you've done a lot of business connectivity services type, integration type applications, and you might have a pretty good managed metadata repository with all of your metadata columns and your published content types and all that kind of stuff, you can bring those across. Performance Point, which is now Power BI, if you want to bring some of those definitions which is in Performance Point from data connections and that kind of stuff, you can bring that across. Secure Store, so for BCS, you need Secure Store, and if you've done a multi-tenant deployment, you need Secure Store, but you need to remember what the past phrase of the Secure Store is. I've had situations where people have done a deployment, never noted down the fast phrase. You can't do anything about it. Well, you can. You have to go through Microsoft and then do a lot of stuff. But user profile databases. You can bring the search admin database, which holds the configurations like keywords, best bits, all that kind of configuration stuff, but not the index or the properties. You have to re-index your content corpus again in order for you to use search. There's detailed information and PowerShell scripts on how to do the migrations for service apps. I'll put them up on my blog, and they're on TechNet as well, and it can be done. It is not as straightforward as bringing a content database, but it's possible. So which brings to MySites and OneDrive for Business. So who has got MySites or personal sites? Yeah. So everybody uses MySites with a quota? Yeah. So this is where you kind of now need to make a decision whether you want to go hybrid. Do I offload MySites to the cloud, or do I still keep it on-premises? And if you do go to the cloud, they're not migrated automatically. You have to you either get the user to move their content across or use a third-party tool. I mean, there's cases for both, obviously, from a compliance and data sovereignty point of view, because the data going to go offshore because we don't have 365 data centers in New Zealand yet. So most of the data is going to be in Australia. There is some good guidelines if you are anybody from government here. Yeah. So there's some good guidelines from the GCIO around going to using Microsoft Cloud and what the risks are. There's a risk framework that you can work through. And each government ministry has to do a risk assessment themselves when choosing a cloud platform. So there's support for that as well. So there used to be a thing called pre-upgrade check that you could run against your content databases before you do an upgrade. It's not there anymore. But however, there is a PowerShell command called test SP content database, woohoo, where you can run against 2010, 2013, or 2016 and find out. It'll basically gives you a whole lot of information about whether these databases are in compatibility mode and all that kind of thing. So the way you do that is you build a new environment in 2016, back up your content databases in SQL, restore them to your 2016 farm, and then run this command against those content databases, right? And it'll give you a report. Who uses managed paths? Do you know what managed paths are? Yeah, so basically you have to make sure that you added the managed paths into the web app before you start attaching. And always start with the top level root site collection first and then the other ones, okay? So no more visual upgrade, which is the question that you asked. Unfortunately. It does exist. It keeps it there, but it doesn't reference it, which is the problem. I think they will do something about it because a lot of people have actually complained about it. The reason is because of cloud, they're pushing people to upgrade the UI as soon as possible. Yeah. Office Web Apps, Office Online Service. So this is, I think for a SharePoint deployment for 2016, you need to have Office Online Service. It's something that you need to consider. And if you are using Office Online Server, you get a better visual experience for users, because as you browse search results and everything, you can see a preview of your search results, preview of a document, those kind of things. So it's a good thing. And to be honest, the deployment is not that hard to do. It's very, very detailed and guideline. This guidelines. But however, it is a separate product, and it needs a separate server license. And of course, Excel Services now lives in Office Online Server. And your web application for your primary SharePoint web app has to be in claims mode. So remember, between 2010 and 2013, when you did the upgrade, you converted your web applications into claims mode. I hope you did. So if you're coming from 2013 to 2016, you have to convert that into claims mode. Yeah. And it is required if you're going to do a hybrid deployment. Your web app has to be in claims mode. And you also need a bunch of SSL certificates. And there you go. That's the PowerShell script to convert a classic web application to claims. And it's, you can do it by web application basis as you do it. And if you use hostname site collections, it's only one web app to deal with, so it's good. Yeah, this talk has already been the introduction to SharePoint framework. I say 2000 and 2013 code mostly will work. So if you got WSPs, if you have the WSPs and the deployments, you can still deploy them. And in most cases, they work from the tests that I've done. But it depends on how much information you have. So there was one situation where I inherited a SharePoint upgrade where they had a bunch of WSPs, but they didn't have the actual WSPs saved somewhere to deploy. What you can do is you can export those out of SharePoint. There's a link there which details all the steps in PowerShell to actually export those out and then redeploy them into a new farm. However, you're not going to get the code for it. It's just going to be the binary or the code files. So if you are upgrading a content database, so this is essentially, first of all, you do test. And that is going to tell you whether it is in upgrade compatibility mode or not. And then if that is a success, you run the next command, which essentially runs the upgrade process. So here's some screenshots, because I really didn't want to do this on stage, which is a good thing, because that just failed, so I'm running on here. So basically, you're running a test. Test SP content database, I'll go this database called content alpha, and then migration 2016, it's gonna run, and it's gonna tell me all these things. And one of the things you have to look for is this line called upgrade blocking. So if it says upgrade blocking true, then you can't run the mount SP content database, it's gonna fail. So you have to go through and figure out, okay, what is it that is blocking my upgrade? So this GUID, and everything will tell you where to look for, right? And you can export this out to, you can output this into an Excel file, just put output Excel at the end of it, and it'll give you like a list of all the issues that you've got. And then you can talk to your developers and figure out, okay, what the hell is going on? We need to fix these things before we can upgrade, all that kind of stuff. And next one is actually, so it's just running. And then the next one is mount, which is the actual upgrade process. And you run the upgrade process, and it's going to show you a little counter. And it's going to say, yep, done. And that's about it. So one other thing to think about is that the bigger the content database, the longer it'll take to upgrade.
So if you've got multiple content databases, you can attach them in parallel. So you can run this command multiple times and attach them in parallel. It'll take a longer time because it's going to go sequentially. But you can somewhat speed it up. So from an upgrade point of view, essentially, it's 10 steps, I say. But it's not that easy, of course. You all know that. So basically, what you're going to do is, so from a content database point of view, you have your existing 2013 environment, and you're going to go to SQL, back up the content databases, restore them into the new environment where you want to upgrade, and then you first put it into read-only mode, back them up, take the databases, and then you're going to run the PowerShell commands. First test them, and then fix the errors, and then mount them, which runs the upgrade process. And if, for example, if one of the upgrades fail halfway through, you can run this upgrade SP content database command to resume the upgrade. Test, validate, it's kind of like a repetitive process, right? You still need to build a 2016 environment to be able to do that, right? So the first thing as part of your discovery process or proof of concept is to build a 2016 environment, right? Get your content databases and start doing some tests. And that'll tell you, okay, where are we really at, right? And if everything is good, then good. Then you plan your upgrade and off you go. Yeah. I mean, SQL will automatically do that behind the scenes when you do a backup and restore. You got to plan for that as well. Yeah. I mean, most cases I've come from 2012 to 2014 haven't had any issues. Obviously you got to go through and check that you got the right permissions and everything on SQL because your service application names and because essentially when you back up a SQL database from, say, 2008 R2 or something, and you restore it, right? You had to also go check permissions and everything as well, right? So, and then as soon as SharePoint goes through and upgrades it, it'll upgrade the schemas. Yeah. So, from upgrade process point of view, do your service applications first. Make read-only detach from all from, don't delete them, obviously. Backup in SQL, restore to new SQL instance, fix permissions, make writable, attach. Right. Because if you do a SQL detach and attach, it should do it. So when you're doing troubleshooting for upgrades, there's always a upgrade error log for each of the upgrades that you do, and they are usually in the 15 hive or the 16 hive. So in SharePoint world, it's C, common files, da-di-da-di-da-di-da-da. There's a long path, and then there's a 15 or 16 folder, and there's a logs folder in there, and it'll say upgrade, GUI date. There's a log file that will show you what errors are there. Look and fail is upgraded automatically. Patching build to build. So this is the next big thing. So if you are, one of the benefits of going with 2016 is now this highly promoted zero downtime patching option. So with this, what essentially means is you can do a service pack upgrade while your users are still using your farm. And there's a really cool video, well, when I say cool as it gets for looking at servers being patched, put out by Microsoft. And I recommend that you do watch it because there's a lot of information in there, and it's done by these guys from the Microsoft Premier Support Team, Bob Fox and Neil Hodgkinson, who are part of the Office Online team. And that you will see, because it's a good one to understand from an operational point of view, how do I keep updating these things? So the link is there, and I highly recommend that you have a look at that. Anybody using Azure currently? Yep. Okay. So with SharePoint, one of the challenges, of course, you're going to have is that, especially with on-premises, is that if you want to have a DR farm, that's a lot of investment, right? Again, it depends on what your availability criteria or what your service level agreements are with your business, whether you want to have, you know, high availability built in so that you don't have failures, or you have a, you know, if something does go wrong, we can fail over to Hamilton or Christchurch or wherever it may be, and then you can bring up a new farm. However, still, that's going to be a cost associated with that. With Azure, what you can do is you can have a passive farm, set up everything in the cloud, and then set up your DR farm in Azure. Or you could have a primary farm in Azure and then have a secondary farm in locally. So consider that as well, because it's a good, because you don't, you only pay for what you use, right? And you don't have to maintain and look after another environment. If you are going with a Azure hybrid connection, then this is an option. You can always do it with AWS as well, Amazon Web Services. And actually, Amazon actually has a really good white paper on how you do that. And you can take that and apply it to Azure. So, yeah. So doesn't matter which platform you, whether you're Azure or AWS, you can still do it. And also locally, I think Revera and some other guys also provide the same type of services around this, having DR on a cloud-based solution. The link that I put at the hybrid.office.com, downloads.html, there is some really, really good white papers and detailed information about doing SharePoint hybrid. Please go there. There's a ton of information you can use as reference. So if you are doing hybrid, I always say the first step of doing hybrid is looking at your identity and how you're going to use your identity. So with any hybrid thing, first thing you need to look at is how is your identity going to be managed. There's a project before a project, so to speak. So think about that AD synchronization. And if you are doing that, certain service applications have to be set up in a certain way. You have to change some server certificates. You need a multiple number of SSL certificates. So just bear that in mind if you are going to be doing SharePoint online, SharePoint on-premises, hybrid type scenario. There is a search going hybrid talk by Jonathan Stuckey on Thursday at 9 a.m. Jonathan and I did a session back in Wellington around hybrid. And I deliberately didn't put a lot of content about doing that configuration on this slide deck because Jonathan's going to cover that in his talk on search hybrid. And also, when I'm talking about search, it's cloud search. There's a new thing called the Cloud Search Service Appliance, which is essentially connecting on-premises your search results into it online and so on and so forth. So please go and see that talk. Like I said, resources and links will be on my blog very soon. Questions?
What use cases do you have for the on-premise versus hybrid versus online only?
So the question is, what use cases?
What
scenarios would you use for on-premises versus hybrid versus cloud? Okay. So one of the first ones you need to consider is that, can my data reside offshore? That's the first one, right? So from a use case point of view, say you have a company who is quite distributed. Say you have office in Singapore. You have office, let's look locally, okay? You go Christchurch, Wellington, Auckland, and you want to expose some team size to external parties who are not part of your organization. Say you've got a contractor base who are not part of your organization. So in that sense, you want to have a collaboration site that's shared with people who are not part of your organization, but you still want to treat them as part of your organization. So in that scenario, you can go with a hybrid type solution where you put your hybrid users in the cloud,
and your organization uses on-premises. So for cross-organization collaboration type of things. And the other one is, again, if you want to, say, do search across different locations and things like that. Yeah. Does that answer the question? What's your scenario? I'm happy to explore that a little bit more if you want, or have a chat. Any other questions? Yes. Right, so the upgrade of workflow server has to be a separate one. So you've got to essentially treat that as, So the workflow manager farm, so it's called a workflow manager farm. So you had to upgrade that as part of your upgrade process. Yeah, it's a separate product. So it's got its own life cycle. And I think, don't quote me on this, I think the workflows that you have currently will work because the next logical upgrade to that is going to Windows Server 10, I believe. But you can still use 2012 R2. So from an upgrade point of view, your workflows will still work in 2016. I don't know on that one, actually. I can find out for you. Yeah. Drop me a line. I can find out, because that's something I need to find out. The way I see it is 2016, if you have 2013 workflow manager farm, 2016 will work with that workflow manager farm. You don't necessarily need to upgrade the workflow manager apart from doing the connections and the however they are integrated. So you have to do the integration again, so to speak. Would I? Personally, yes, I would. Yeah, because 2016 each organization will have its merits and benefits and pros and cons and all that kind of thing. The investment, especially in SharePoint world, right, between 2013 and 2016, because they didn't want to actually put out a 2016 on-premises product. Customer pressure made them do it, because since 2013 came up and the ramp up of Office Online and SharePoint Online, most of the development, most of the work has been so rapid. Like, you would get features for 365 every 3 months or so, right? And what they've essentially done is taken about a year's worth of work and then compiled that into a product. So you're not going to get the same quick release of features and functionality into 2016 on-premises. They have said that they're going to aim to do a feature pack every 6 months. So that also has an impact, because just imagine having to manage all of that from an operational point of view, right? You still have to do the installations, configuration, and everything. And what they're trying to essentially say is to keep your customizations to a minimum and use whatever configuration and out of the box you can as possible. So if I had a 2013 environment and I could get away with not having to deploy a 2016 server farm, I would migrate everything into cloud.
What is a pain point with 2016 server farm? It's the same as Office 365.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's always going to be scenarios where organizations will have a on-premises deployment for custom solutions. So, for example, if you're going to do BI, for example, and you wanted to do a SQL Server reporting services, type of integrations, and SharePoint as a... But then again, they've decoupled the BI stack completely away from SharePoint anyway. And there's... As 365 at the moment is offering so much new functionality and features that it actually becomes more compelling, unless you have a data sovereignty problem that you have to be on premises. Yeah. Cool. Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming. Oh, I do have a drone to give away. Ooh.
this is going to be good. Before I do that, please do an evaluation, and feedback is quite important. So, okay. Who has done a 2003 to 2007 migration? You have? That's okay, then you just want a drone. Thanks, guys.